Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Today's Friday, November 24th, and it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. And we're going to basically spend much of the next 2 hours talking about the Middle East. So I'm going to go back in time, but all with regard to today. Egypt says that 130,000 liters of diesel is going to be delivered daily to Gaza when the truce starts. Egypt said 130,000 liters of diesel and 4 trucks of gas will be delivered daily to Gaza when a 4-day truce starts today. Dia Rashwan, the head of Egypt's State Information Service, also said in a statement early on Friday that 200 trucks of aid would enter Gaza daily. Israel and Palestinian Islamist group Hamas will start a 4-day truce on Friday at 7 o'clock in the morning local time. Well, Israel and Hamas entered a 4-day ceasefire today, with the Palestinian militant set to release a first group of hostages later in the day and increased aid to flow into the besieged Gaza Strip, the first pause in the nearly 7-week-old war. The truce's scheduled start was 7 in the morning. A number of Palestinians were expected to be released from Israeli jails later in the day as part of the ceasefire. Well, international affairs editor Philippe Atul from France 24 talked about the tense lead-up to the first Hamas hostage release scheduled for 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Paris time, this afternoon. And he says there's a big gap between 6 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time and 2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. That's an 8-hour gap, he said. A lot can happen in those 8 hours, so I think a lot of fingers are being crossed in both the Palestinian territories and in Israel, that there are going to be no hiccups and that this hostage fear is going to go through. At dawn, teams of thousands of people had fled to areas near Gaza's border with Egypt were preparing to return to their villages. Minutes after the 4-day truce between Israel and Hamas took effect, 16-year-old Omar Jibrin emerged from a hospital in the south of the territory where he and 8 family members had sought refuge. "I'm going home," he said as he began the journey. However, Israeli warplanes over southern Gaza dropped Arabic language leaflets early on Friday warning people not to head back to the north. "The war is not over yet," the leaflet said. "Returning to the north is forbidden and very dangerous." So 8 trucks are entering Gaza from Egypt after the truce begins. 8 trucks were entering the Gaza Strip from Egypt on Friday, around 1.5 hours after the truce began. And I see there's a caller on the line, so we're going to pick them up in a moment. And that was about an hour and a half after the truce began between Israel and Palestinian Hamas fighters. That's what Reuters TV footage showed. And lastly, just a short sentence, 2 of the trucks representing Egyptian organizations sported banners that said, "Together for Humanity," end quote. Another said, "For our brothers in Gaza." Another caller left. Okay. Well, the Gaza truce appears to hold shakily. There were no major reports of bombings, artillery strikes, or rocket attacks as Israel and Hamas started a 4-day ceasefire in Gaza on Friday, the first pause in a 48-day-old war that has devastated the Palestinian enclave. A Reuters correspondent near the northern part of Gaza heard no Israeli Air Force activity overhead and saw no telltale contrails typically left by Palestinian rocket launches. Lebanon's Al-Mayadeen TV reported that since the start of the truce, no sounds of bombings were heard in Gaza. But he said Israeli forces were preventing residents from returning to their homes in the densely populated northern part of the enclave. Soldiers opened fire in one incident, Al Jazeera said, but there was no indication that it resulted in casualties. There was no immediate comment from the Israeli military, which had earlier issued a call on Palestinians to stay away from the northern Gaza Strip, which it described as a dangerous war zone. A lot is at stake here. The Gaza ceasefire seems to hold ahead of hostage release. Claire Pacalin reported from Jerusalem. She's with Florence Van Katt on the pressure facing both Israel and Hamas to ensure that the fragile truce is kept in Gaza. There's not a lot of trust between the two parties, but both parties also have strong interest in making sure this deal does go ahead. Well, there is a column of Israeli tanks that left Gaza. A Reuters correspondent saw dozens of Israeli military vehicles, including tanks, moving away from the Gaza Strip. Several soldiers in the armored column said they had been pulled out of the Palestinian territory. Egypt says that 200 trucks of aid will enter Gaza daily during the Israel-Hamas truce. Cairo correspondent Edouard Cousin from France 24 breaks down the expected increase in aid to the besieged enclave of Gaza during a four-day truce between Israel and Hamas that began in the morning. So the big thing is, of course, 200 trucks of aid per day. Well, the Lebanese border is calm as Israel-Hamas truce takes effect. Calm returned to Lebanon's southern border on Friday as a temporary truce took effect in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, according to state media, residents, and an Agent France Press journalist. Since the Gaza war erupted on October 7, Lebanon's southern border with Israel has witnessed deadly exchanges of fire, primarily involving the Israeli army and Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, as well as Palestinian militant groups. Hezbollah has yet to say whether it will comply with the terms of the agreement that was brokered by Qatar with help from Egypt and the United States. Quote, a precarious calm reigned on the southern border, with the humanitarian truce in Gaza coming into effect at 7 o'clock in the morning, local time, Lebanon's official national news agency reported, and an Agence France Press journalist in the Maryayoun border region said he had heard exchange of fire 10 minutes prior to the truce before the guns fell silent. The caller on the line is pick up the caller. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, caller. Thanks for calling. How are you?
Doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Thank God. Okay. So do you want to make a statement or do you have a question?
Yes, I actually do have a question.
So go ahead.
I'm American. I'm American and I'm Catholic. I have historical, family lineage that fought in the Crusades.
Really? Wow. That's amazing that you can reflect back so far. It's wonderful that your family kept, in a sense, an awareness of it. That's beautiful.
Yes, sir, I actually had to tattoo my family motto on my arm.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Well, so that goes back to your historical background, huh? That's amazing.
Absolutely.
I don't have a lineage that goes that far because I don't even know that far. You're very lucky.
Yes, we had that family Bible. It goes back 800 years.
That is amazing. That is literally amazing. You know, I think 800 years ago, when you think about it, I don't know how many people actually could write. They may have talked, of course, but I don't know if they were able to write. You've got an unbelievable family history. My goodness. When did you start to read your history?
No, people weren't actually able to read and write as a normal parlance.
Right.
It was probably like 100 years ago. That was normal in the Western world.
Yes, of course. That is amazing. So how did you learn about it? Did you see it in writing, or were you told this by your parents or your grandparents?
No, I'm actually still... No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No, I'm still a part of Clan Johnstone in Scotland.
Well, inshallah...
We called to action one time.
Okay. So how did you learn about this? Through your parents, through your grandparents? How did it come about that you learned this history?
Oh, no, it's something that you're raised with, you know?
I've only been called to action
one time before.
I see. Well, and where were you in where did you see action?
Nigeria, 2014.
Really? Oh my goodness.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was. Most people never even heard of Nigeria, but I have, of course, and because I'm interested in what goes on around the world. But they had one unbelievable struggle in Nigeria. And it's so good.
The thing about Nigeria that I learned is that it's a very beautiful country, and like everything that's beautiful has to be tainted in some way. So I had to fight Boko Haram.
Yeah. Well,
I was trying to save people, and I got shot.
Oh, my goodness. Were you able
to
take
right?
a break from that?
I promise you I am not a zombie. I promise.
Oh, okay.
They airlifted me. We were supposed to take a village from Nigeria through Cameroon into Chad. And after I got shot, I got airlifted to Tunisia, and they took me to Germany.
That's amazing. Why to stop in Tunisia? Just because the airline would only fly up to in the northern part of Africa?
Because that's the only place that would airlift me. I promise if they could have taken me out of Libya, they would have died.
Well, there's too much political strife in Libya. Two different governments, each one slugging it out with the other. So I think Tunisia may have been a great choice, which is fascinating. And I guess it must have direct flights into Europe from Algiers.
I never even had the opportunity to go and see the ruins of original Carthage, which is the only disappointing thing.
That would be disappointing. I never had that opportunity either. The only places I've been in Africa were in southern Africa. So I've been to South Africa and Mozambique. And let me just think. I was in Egypt, of course, and I guess in Zambia. I'm sorry, I almost forgot. It's been many years. I'm an old man already. I'm 73, but I did a lot of traveling in my day. So, what brought you to all these places in northern Africa?
What brought me to Africa was I'm Catholic.
Yes.
And I heard that there was Christians under fire. And I'll be damned. Yeah, I'll be damned if I'm not going to pull the rifle and take a shot.
I'm
happy to protect Christians. I don't really care where you're from.
Well,
there was a village in western Nigeria, and I heard that Boko Haram was about to attack them. They were going to kill the adults they're going to do unspeakable things to the young girls, and they're going to take the young boys and turn them into soldiers. And, yeah, I thought that was probably the worst possible thing that you could ever do to anybody. So
it's unfortunate, but the truth is what you're saying is a reality in Africa, other places as well. But the historical perspective on Africa speaks to what you've said. And it's I think most people are unaware of it. I don't know why. I guess we don't get much news in the United States from Africa. So they don't, unless there is a war. And even then, the coverage is very sparse. I think that the Europeans do a better job of covering that. So you've got to read the European press. And they do translate a lot of stuff into English for those who don't speak any other language. The French and German quite often translated. So that's cool. My goodness. When you were in Carthage, that must have been
Can I throw something into the fray?
Absolutely.
My friends, I promise you right now there is a battle between good and evil. Promise you there is different cultures that are clashing right now, and that's going to be violent, and it's going to be terrible. People are going to die. You can't really save yourself from that experience.
No.
There is one side that says no person is property. No slavery at all. There is another side that says sometimes people are property, and I think that they earn every little bit of
humanity
encroachment. I'm going to say encroachment.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the nicest way I can say that. Yeah, don't. Do you think that you can own people? Hell with you.
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know where it came about that people thought that they could own others. But when we look at history,
there are more. Can I say something? Because there are more slaves today than there are four. When America abolished slavery, there were about 8 million slaves all around the world. There are 40 million plus slaves in the world right now. That's
really,
it's a ridiculous. Yes, absolutely. Most of it's in India. A lot of it is in Africa. We can't do anything. Have you ever seen a slave?
I've never been to India. I was in Pakistan.
You don't have to go to India. I saw a slave when I was in Nigeria, and I was like, oh, my God. How much money do I need to hand this person to buy you, to give you your freedom?
Mm.
No. This is a very messed up world, my friend.
Yes, it is. There doesn't seem to be a leadership that demands and has the strength to say, this is wrong and this has got to stop. I guess every society...
We did that in the Western world.
Oh, absolutely.
Said this has to stop.
It's not indigenous to some other places in the world. We did it in the United States. We did it in Canada.
Sir, I just want to distinguish the difference. In the Western world, if you own a slave, you will be demonized. You'll probably end up in prison. In Africa, depending on what country you're in, nobody cares. If you're in Asia, depending on what country you're in, nobody cares. So... We're writing the rule book.
Yeah, but do you think we still have slavery in the United States?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I'm happy to acknowledge that people are being flown into like New York City and Chicago, and they're young bucks from India sitting there working, you know, 20-hour days, sleeping on a cot in a basement of a 7-Eleven or something. Yeah, I understand that there are terrible things happening here. Actual slavery? I've seen that on foreign lands.
That's very true. But you're right about the people who come into the United States and try to make their way through it. And they work in unbelievable conditions in order to make a buck, in order to make a living, in order to be able to survive, in the hope that they can grow into it in a way that's demeaning, which is unfortunate.
Sure.
But that's a new form of slavery. It's a nuance.
Absolutely. Have you heard about the au pairs?
No, I hadn't.
The au pair program is people from the Philippines and Thailand and a bunch of different Asian countries and even African countries.
Yeah.
The au pair, the entire concept is that people come to America, serve X amount of time as a maid and a nanny, and you'll take care of the kids or whatever. And then Americans, because apparently we're the most greedy, redeemable a-holes on the planet, we'll just take your passport from you, and you live. You don't have an identity anymore. All you have to do is clean up after us, and you'll never be able to go home, see your friends and family again. That's actually something that has happened.
I didn't know that that's happening. Why do you think that it's not known? Because to be honest, I read a lot. And I read a lot of the foreign press as well, because I speak many languages. But the problem, I don't understand why it's not being covered. Why is there a reluctance to tell it the way it is?
Why? Okay, the reason that stuff is not covered when it is detrimental is that they want to continue having people play the role.
Uh-huh.
So they need more people coming in under this guise of we're very friendly. And
do you think that when people come to the United States and they realize, like the old pairs that come in and are brought into the United States from all kinds of different countries, do they realize what they're getting into, or is this wide-eyed?
Absolutely
and,
not.
Unaware. Absolutely not.
No, they are absolutely not aware at all. I know that they're not aware.
What about the federal government and local government?
Are they involved? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I don't know if they're involved. Are they?
Why wouldn't they be? No, when you're talking about involvement, you're talking about direct participation or turning a blind eye.
No,
I would tend to think
that they're turning a blind eye if we don't hear about it from a local perspective. And I don't even hear it on a national perspective. So how did you learn about all this?
Participation.
I'm sorry, just the what?
Participation.
Oh, participation in what? You participated in what?
People that try to have slavery legal in America.
Uh-huh. So what did you do about that? Or what could you do? Or maybe you couldn't do anything. I don't know.
Not worried about it. No, if you tie a stick to somebody's arm and you step down on the stick and you break their arm the other way, and then you have a passport made for them to go home, you can send someone home and cripple somebody for life at the same time.
And what's the purpose of someone here in the United States, for example, to cripple someone and then send them home? Where does all this animosity and anger come
from?
If you think
that you can bring a foreigner to this land and use their labor for your benefit,
uh-huh.
you get crippled because you're the garbage. I'm not talking about harming people that come here. I'm talking about sending them home.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to hurt people that come here looking for a better life. I want to hurt people that use them for slave labor.
I hear what you're saying.
I do.
Is there any resolution to this sort of issue or problem? And
absolutely. There is actually a very simple solution. Don't come here.
Uh-huh. But are people are people from abroad, when they do come here, do they know what they're going to confront?
They have no idea. No, I'm saying that no matter if the opportunity sounds too good to be true, it probably is. There are predatory people in America. There are predatory people in Saudi Arabia. There are predatory people in Egypt. There are a bunch of places all over the world promising you shiny objects. Not go there. Because I promise you, it's not going to be okay. You are going to end up in a terrible situation. And I'm very sad that I live in a country where that's possible. It is here.
I wanted to ask you,
if
it's not too personal, how did you learn about all of this?
I went through Triple Canopy into Nigeria in 2014.
And that's how you learned about
chest.
What was going on. That I remember because you said that earlier. So that's when you were first introduced to this system.
I learned that nothing is sacred globally.
Yeah.
At a young age.
And why do you think that as a nation, that we're so naive to this?
I think that Americans don't understand that terrible things are happening all around them all the time because they've never had to experience conflict.
Mm-hmm.
They understood that there was conflict around them. They would lose their minds because they're not emotionally adept to that.
Uh-huh. Well, unbelievable. Well, I must thank you for the call. I certainly didn't expect this conversation, but I hope you don't mind. It's already half hour into our broadcast, so let me cover some of the other issues that I was covering, but I want to thank you for making the time to give us a call. Really was a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
And
thank you for your time.
I wish you all the best. Be well. Thank you. Have a good day, sir. Well, there we have it. Let me just quickly look. Let's cover some other things that are happening. The Lebanese border is calm as the Israel-Hamas truce is taking effect. There's a calm return to Lebanon's southern border on Friday as a temporary truce took effect in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, according to state media residents and journalists. Since the Gaza war erupted on October 7th, Lebanon's southern border with Israel has witnessed deadly exchange of fire, primarily involving the Israeli army and Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, as well as Palestinian militant groups. Hezbollah has yet to say whether it will comply with the terms of the agreement that was broken by Qatar with help from Egypt and the United States. Quote, a precarious calm reigned on the southern border with the humanitarian truce in Gaza coming into effect at 7 o'clock in the morning local time, and Lebanon's official national news agency reported. And a journalist in the Maria Youn a border region, said he had heard exchanges of fire 10 minutes prior to the truce before the guns fell silent. Then Palestinian officials say that 24 women, 15 teenage males, are expected to be freed from Israeli jails. Israel will on Friday release 39 Palestinian prisoners, among them 24 women and 15 teenage males, in the occupied West Bank in exchange for 13 hostages due to be freed from the Gaza Strip by Hamas, and a Palestinian official said. The inmates, all of them from the occupied West Bank or Jerusalem, will be handed over to the International Committee of the Red Cross at Israel's Ofer military jail around 4 p.m. local time. Said Hadira Fares, Palestinian Commissioner for Prisoners. And that would coincide with the planned handover at the Gaza-Egypt border of 13 women and children who were among some 240 people taken hostage by Hamas gunmen during a deadly October 7 attack in southern Israel. Quote, after the Red Cross receives the Palestinian prisoners, the ones from Jerusalem will go to Jerusalem, and the ones from the West Bank will gather in Betunia Municipal Council, where their families will be waiting, Fares told Reuters. Well, food and cooking gas tankers are entering Gaza. Israel announced that 4 tankers with fuel and 4 tankers with cooking oil, or rather cooking gas, entered the Gaza Strip on Friday, the first day of what is meant to be a 4-day ceasefire. Israel has agreed to allow the delivery of 130,000 liters, that's 34,300 gallons of fuel a day, into besieged Gaza for humanitarian needs for the duration of the truce. And this would be roughly twice the amount permitted previously, but still only a small portion of Gaza's daily needs, estimated at more than 1 million liters or 264,000 gallons as opposed to what is being delivered, which is 34,300 gallons. So for most of the past 7 weeks of war, Israel had barred the entry of any fuel into Gaza, claiming it could be used by Hamas for military purposes. The United Nations aid agency pushed back against such claims, saying that fuel deliveries were closely supervised and urgently needed to avert a humanitarian catastrophe. It's not immediately clear if Friday's deliveries meant the new daily target set by the truce, COGAT, a body in Israel's defense ministry responsible for Palestinian civilian affairs. Well, Palestinians are seen walking north despite Israeli warnings. Seems that Palestinians were seen walking north along Gaza's main highway despite warnings from the Israeli military not to try to return to their homes. Arabic language leaflets dropped on Friday over southern Gaza said that, quote, the war has not ended yet, end quote, and people should remain in place. Quote, returning to the north is prohibitive and very dangerous, the leaflet said. Your fate and the fate of your families is in your hands. We have warned you, end quote. Israeli military spokesperson Avichai Adrai posted on X in Arabic that movement on the highway would only be permitted in one direction from north to south. Since the early days of their war triggered by the Hamas attack on southern Israel 7 weeks ago, hundreds of thousands of people have left their homes in the north at the orders of the Israeli army. Sirens sound, it's about 5 hours ago, sirens sounded in Israel's Eilat, a warning of a possible attack from Yemen. Sirens sounded in Israel's southern Red Sea resort of Eilat on Friday, the military said, warning of a possible long-range aerial attack from Yemen. Yemeni Houthis have previously launched drones and missiles at Israel in solidarity with the Palestinian militants and Israel has been that Israel has been battling in the Gaza Strip since October 7. Well, Israeli troops fatally shot 2 Palestinians and wounded 11 others as they headed toward the main combat zone in northern Gaza, despite warnings by the Israeli army to stay put. An Associated Press journalist saw the two bodies and the wounded as they arrived at a hospital in the town of Deir al-Bala in the southern half of Gaza. The injured had been shot in the legs. Friday's shooting came hours after the Israeli military warned hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians who sought refuge in southern Gaza not to attempt to return to their homes in the north half or the northern half of the territory, the focus of Israel's ground offensive. Witnesses said that Israeli troops are opening fire on people trying to head north. The French police on Friday detained Algerian international Youssef Attal, who plays for Ligue 1 team in Nice, in a probe into suspected, quote, justification of terrorism, end quote, after he published a social media post on the Israel-Hamas war, prosecutors said. Last month, the 27-year-old defender was banned for 7 matches over the post, which he quickly deleted and for which he subsequently issued an apology. Well, the public prosecutor in Nice opened a probe following a request for the local prefect and mayor of Nice. The World Health Organization is concerned about those left in Al-Shifa Hospital. The World Health Organization spokesperson said on Friday that it was working on further evacuation from northern Gaza hospitals as soon as possible as the truce gets underway, voicing fears for the safety of those remaining at Al-Shifa Hospital. Quote, we're extremely concerned about the safety of the estimated 100 patients and health workers remaining at Al-Shifa, said the World Health Organization spokesperson Christian Lindmeier. He declined to react to comments from the Gaza Health Ministry, saying it was suspending cooperation with the Global Health Agency amid reports that Israel is holding medical staff for questioning. Well, the United Kingdom doubles down on humanitarian aid to Gaza. The United Kingdom will double its humanitarian aid to Gaza with a further £30 million. That's about 34.5 million euros for Palestinian civilians affected by the conflict between Israel and Hamas. The foreign ministry, the foreign minister David Cameron said on Friday. Cameron met Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem on Thursday and is due to hold discussions with Palestinian officials on Friday for talks on how UK efforts can help alleviate the growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza, his office said. I can announce new £30 million of funding, which will be spent on vital aid such as shelter and medical provisions, Cameron said in a statement, quote, it is vital to protect civilians from harm, and we are urgently looking at all avenues to get aid into Gaza, including land, maritime, and air routes. London has already released two tranches of aid, £10 million and £20 million pounds last month. Cameron will also discuss supporting the Palestinian Authority, quote, including through training and capacity building, end quote, and a look towards a long-term political solution to the crisis. Well, Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas chief, the leader of the Palestinian Islamist group Hamas, said on Friday in a recording that the group is committed to the truce and hostage swap deal as long as Israel is committed as well. Well, the Gaza truce is a short pause, says Israeli Defense Minister. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant has reiterated that the truce underway in Gaza is a, quote, short pause, end quote, after which Israel will resume operating its full military force. Quote, there will be a short pause, and then we will continue operating with full military power. We will not stop until we achieve our goals, the destruction of Hamas, and bringing home the hostages from Gaza to Israel. There are 240 hostages, and it is something we cannot accept and cannot tolerate, said Gallant after meeting his Italian counterpart in Tel Aviv, as Israel prepares to receive 13 hostages from Gaza in return for the release of 39 Palestinian prisoners. Well, Egypt is preparing to receive hostages at the Rafah border crossing. Egypt is preparing to receive the hostages that Hamas will release in Gaza, says the latest statement released by Egypt's State Information Service, SIS. Egypt's mediation efforts have yielded the release of 12 Thai hostages from Thailand, naturally, and 13 Israelis, including women and children, held by Hamas, the government media office said. Well, a dozen Thai nationals are going to be released in addition to the 13 Israeli captives. But just minutes ago before the 4 p.m. local time deadline for a hostage prisoner swap under the Israel-Hamas truce deal, Egypt has announced that 12 Thai nationals, will also be freed from captivity in Gaza. Well, the current temporary ceasefire is not enough, says the Spanish Prime Minister at the Rafah crossing. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said during a visit to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt that the current ceasefire in Gaza is not enough and that a permanent ceasefire was needed. Sanchez and Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo held a joint press conference at the Rafah crossing as Israel awaits the release of hostages from Gaza with bated breath. Prime Minister says that 12 Thai workers were released. Thailand's Prime Minister Sreta Thavisin has confirmed that 12 Thai workers have been released from captivity in Gaza in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter. Israeli hostages in Gaza were transferred by the Red Cross or to the Red Cross on the way to Rafah, said Israeli TV stations. Israeli army withdraws from Al-Shifa Hospital after the truce, says Hamas. Israeli forces have withdrawn from Gaza's city's Al-Shifa Hospital, said the Hamas-run health ministry. Hamas health ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Khudra told Agence France-Presse that the Israeli military had withdrawn, but the people remaining at Al-Shifa were in a battered complex whose, quote, main generator is destroyed, along with numerous buildings. Well, it seems the first group of hostages are making their way out of Gaza, Israeli media reported. Israeli media, according unnamed officials, are saying that the 13 hostages are now in the hands of the Red Cross staff and are in ambulances on the way from Khan Yunis, the largest city in southern Gaza, to the Rafah crossing. The release of 13 hostages, mother and children, is the first of four expected stages of hostages releases in exchange for the release of 39 Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails. There is a chance we can get out most of the hostages, says a veteran Israeli negotiator. As Hamas prepares to release a first group of hostages held for more than 6 weeks in Gaza, it's worth remembering that Israelis have been held hostage many times over the nation's 75-year history. In October 2011, Franco-Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit was freed by Hamas after being held in captivity for more than 5 years. He'd been captured during a cross-border raid. In perspective, he spoke of the man who played a key role in negotiating his release. Veteran hostage negotiator Dr. Gershon Baskin is now Middle East Director, the Advocacy Group International Communities. He told us that assuming the truce holds and that Israel frees Palestinian prisoners as planned, quote, there is a chance, end quote, that all civilian hostages being held by Hamas will be released. Sources close to Hamas says that Israel hostages were handed over to the Red Cross. A source close to Hamas has confirmed Israeli media reports that the hostages in Gaza have been handed over to the Red Cross. So hostages are now transferred to the Egyptian authorities, say Israeli media. Hamas confirms hostages were handed over to the Red Cross. the Gaza-based Al-Aqsa TV run by Hamas is now reporting that the Palestinian group's militant wing, the Al-Hassam Brigade, have completed the handover of the hostages to the Red Cross. Israel summons the Spanish and Belgian ambassadors. Israel has summoned the Spanish and Belgian ambassadors over comments made by the Spanish and Belgian prime minister at a press event on the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing with Gaza. Earlier on Friday, Sir Pedro Sanchez said the current four-day truce was not enough and a permanent Israel-Hamas ceasefire was needed. So Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo held a joint press conference at the Rafah crossing in Egypt today. Well, a four-day Israel-Hamas truce came into effect Friday at 7 o'clock local time, with a first batch of 13 Hamas hostages in Gaza to be released at 4 p.m. local time. The truce will hold for 4 days, and the temporary cessation of hostilities will cover northern and southern Gaza, Hamas military wing said. Ismail Haniyeh, the leader of Hamas, said on Friday in a recording that the group is committed to the truce and hostage swap deal as long as Israel is committed as well. The death toll of Palestinians killed in Gaza since October 7 rose to 14,854. Another 36,000 people have been wounded, according to Gaza Authority figures. Israel launched attacks on Gaza after Hamas militants crossed the border on October 7 and killed 1,200 Israelis. More than 240 others were taken hostage. Well, just about a minute ago, Israel on Friday awaits the release of 13 hostages held in Gaza since October 7th in exchange for dozens of Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails under the terms of a four-day Israel-Hamas truce. And it's only, this is from about a minute ago. Let's just see what else is going on. Let's see what else is going on around the world. I know a few people remember South Africa's Pistorius has been granted parole over his girlfriend's murder. South Africa's ex-Olympic runner, Oscar Pistorius, was granted early release from prison today, a decade after he fatally shot his girlfriend, Eva Steenkamp, in a crime that gripped the world, prison authorities said. One second. Let's quickly look. 1 moment here. One moment, let me just quickly see if we've got this. Okay, so Oscar Pistorius is going to be released from prison 10 years after killing his girlfriend, Eva Steenkamp. Oscar Pistorius will be released from prison after nearly a decade behind bars for murdering his girlfriend, Eva Steenkamp, after winning his case at a parole board hearing. One second. The South African former Paralympic champion shot and killed his partner at their home in Pretoria in 2013 and was jailed for 13 years for her murder in 2016. On November 24, private parole board hearing at Atteridge Gevalde prison in Pretoria set his release for January 5, 2024. Once released, he will have to attend therapy for anger management and remain under supervision without being able to leave the area of Watercloof, where he will be staying with family for 5 years. This is, one second, I'll try to cover this as well. Okay. One moment here. Well, there's some other things that are happening around the world. North Korea is quitting the military pact with Seoul. So the question is, what's next? Within hours of the North Korean spy satellite launch, the military de-escalation pact was ditched, and both Koreas are beefing up border surveillance operations. North Korea is expected to resume provocations of its land and sea borders with South Korea after Pyongyang announced on Thursday that it was withdrawing from the 2018 Inter-Korean Pact designed to reduce military tensions in the Korean Peninsula. Analysts have warned that the North has been emboldened by its new relationship with Moscow, which South Korean intelligence has claimed provided technical assistance for Tuesday's launch of a North Korean rocket that put its Maligyong-1 space satellite into orbit. State media has already boasted that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has been provided with new images of U.S. military bases on the Pacific island of Guam, and it is likely that the new spacecraft is being tasked with identifying defenses on the South Korean side of the demilitarized zone, the DMZ, that divides the peninsula. South Korea had hinted before the launch that if the North defied international requests not to go ahead with the deployment of the satellite, it would have little choice but to reconsider the 2018 agreement signed by Kim and then South Korean President Moon Jae-in. With South Korea's warning, it might suspend the Inter-Korean Comprehensive Military Agreement was never going to dissuade North Korea from launching a military satellite, said Luis Eric Easley, a professor of international studies, Orha Women's University in Seoul. But this allows the Yoon administration to step away from the previous administration's confidence-building measures that disproportionately benefited the Kim regime and which Pyongyang has violated numerous times, Yang has said. The surveillance drone operation Seoul may soon commence along the DMZ should produce more useful intelligence than North Korea's rudimentary satellite program, Easley added, but warned that, quote, Pyongyang will likely use South Korean drone flights as well as an excuse for further military provocations. On Wednesday, just hours after the spy satellite launch, President Yuk Sung-yeol approved the suspension of a clause in the agreement that enforced a no-fly zone along the land and sea demarcation line. The clause had long been unpopular with the South Korean military because it effectively forbade reconnaissance flights close to the border. The military argued this reduced the South's ability to monitor troop movements in the north and anticipate and withstand any sudden attack. In a statement, South Korean Prime Minister Han Duk-soo told reporters after a cabinet meeting, quote, this is necessary for the security of South Korea and it is thoroughly justified and a minimal defensive measure for the North Korean complete withdrawal. North Korea upped the ante the following day by announcing that it was withdrawing entirely from the agreement. A statement from the Defense Ministry carried by state media KCNA said its forces, quote, will not be bound, unquote, by the agreement and that all military measures, quote, will be restored immediately, unquote. It added that South Korea would be forced to, quote, pay dearly for its decision to withdraw from part of the agreement. So analysts say one of the first moves is likely to be the restoration and reoccupation of a guard post within the DMZ that were decommissioned after the 2018 agreement. Artillery exercises close to the disputed sea border off the coast, sea coast, the west coast of the peninsula may also resume, while winter maneuvers in December are likely to be larger than in previous years. There's also concern over the Pyongyang development of nuclear weapons, with the International Atomic Energy Agency confirming that the North Yongbyon Nuclear Research Facility has resumed operations, and South Korean intelligence warning that a seventh underground nuclear test could take place next year. So, Woo Young-gil, a former diplomat and senior South Korean intelligence officer, said it was inevitable that tension would spike on the peninsula as soon as the agreement was terminated, but he argued that it has effectively been defunct for some time. I would say that the ending of the agreement itself is not all that significant, largely because the North has been repeatedly violating the terms of the deal for the past few years anyway, he advised. So that's the story there. Well, I guess that's where we're going to be. Today's Friday, the 24th of November. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for our caller today. Very, very interesting discussion with him, which I appreciated, and I'm glad that he made that call. And there's a lot to learn about slavery and demeanor around the world, in Nigeria, in the United States, and so on. So that's the story. Have a great weekend. Hopefully things will all go well in the Middle East the comforting situation that is changing and where the hostages being exchanged. So we'll see where that goes, and we'll hope for the best over the weekend. And then we'll speak to you on Monday at 10 o'clock. Be well, and thank you very, very much for being with us. Oh, I didn't realize. Well, we've got more time. Forgive me. So I didn't realize how far the time was going. I wanted to cover some other things with you that I had run out of time. One second. Let's cover some other news. A German activist are launching a Black Friday campaign against Amazon. The German Pen Collective has started a new intervention against Amazon to mark Black Friday. Unionists want a crackdown on subcontractors, but the industry is against an outright ban. The German artist activist Pen Collective greeted the traditional shopping frenzy of Black Friday week with a campaign aimed at the online retailer Amazon and what one PEN activist called its, quote, Soviet, end quote, business model. In keeping with PEN's ambition to create an explosive concoction of activism, hacking, and art, the campaign is a four-pronged attack. The protest on Black Friday outside the Amazon Tower in building in Berlin on an online petition, a satirical Amazon-themed circus created by the Rimini Protocol Theater Group, and an Amazon Leaks page where the company's employees can report alleged abuses at the company. But according to Gene Peters, PEN spokesperson, investigative journalist, and veteran of several PEN stunts, the reported working conditions are just a symptom of the basic problem Amazon's colossally successful business model. This, he claims, is unique, as it relies on monopolizing access to customers, forcing small retailers to give up huge percentage to sell on its marketplace, and above all, exploiting an army of small subcontractors whose employees have only limited time contracts and few workers' rights. Well, delivery companies in Germany like Amazon, Hermes, and FedEx use subcontractors who often contract even smaller companies. Some of these operations, according to Rory Litton, spokesperson for Germany's second largest trade union, Verdi, are so small that they only employ two or three people and only exist for a short time. They know they can't fulfill the contract if they have correct health and safety and pay a decent wage, so the big companies get rid of the responsibility, he said. Linton describes cases where subcontractors did not allow their workers to turn on the Amazon app that records their working hours for the first and last hours of their shift. Not only that, Amazon stipulates that its, quote, freight partners, end quote, in Germany could only operate a maximum of 10 trucks, which, according to Verdi, both restricts any chance of competition and ensures that delivery drivers cannot organize effectively. Quote, with subcontractors, there are almost no checks and balances in terms of workers' rights, health, and safety, Lincoln advised Deutsche Welle, once workers get less than minimum wage. So I guess that's where we're at. Let me just quickly check. Bear with me a moment. See what else we can tell you about. All right, let me just check a couple of other things. Robert Fico is due to arrive in Prague for his first foreign visit as Prime Minister today. And so we look at some controversial figures in his government, a coalition of three parties ranging from the left to the far right. So when President Zuzana Kapitova appointed the new Slovak government led by Robert Fico on October 25, she expressed hope it would represent all citizens, including those who had not voted for Fico's SMER-SD party. Indeed, the majority of the Slovak electorate did not vote for the nominally left-wing SMER party, which garnered only 23% of the vote in the election of September 30. But even the low result was enough for SMER to become the biggest party and form a new coalition government with the far-right Slovak National Party, the SNS, and the left-wing HLAS. It was also enough to propel 59-year-old Fico, who had resigned as prime minister in 2018 during the political crisis that followed the murder of journalist Jan Kuciak and his fiancée, back to the political front line. Several of those who now sit around a cabinet table and indeed a number of those who now hold senior ministerial posts have faced accusations of establishing criminal groups within state structures. Well, let's look at Prime Minister Robert Fico. Four-time prime minister and leader of the predominantly, or rather nominally, Social Democratic SMER-SD party, Fico rose to power in 2006, and at the time, he was a very different politician to the pro-Russian Orbán-style leader we see today. 2018, for instance, he said, "We are the European Union. If we talk about Slovakia, we also talk about the priorities of the European Union. There is nothing better than the European Union. There just isn't," said. Well, the statement came a day after the murder of journalist Jan Kuciak and his fiancée, Martina Kuznetsova. Kuciak was an investigative journalist who had been working on uncovering alleged tax fraud committed by high-profile businessmen linked to political parties such as SNER, SMER, and FICO was forced to resign in the fallout from Kuciak's murder. Both he and his party have been accused of widespread corruption, which paved the way for the election victory of the anti-corruption Olano party, now called Movement Slovakia, in 2020. This was the first election Smer lost in almost 15 years. So after the new Olano-led government made major personnel changes in the police, judiciary, and the public prosecutor's office, members of Smer suddenly faced serious accusations of corruption and forming criminal groups within state structures. So according to media reports, Robert Fico and Robert Kalinak were the ringleaders in all this. The Attorney General later discussed the charges on the grounds that the police did not have enough evidence against the two politicians. So, definitely an issue. Well, there's a culture minister by the name of Martina Šimkovičová. Slovakia's new culture minister is Martina Šimkovičová. The 52-year-old journalist and former TV news anchor is a member of the far-right Slovak National Party, SNS. Šimkovičová was fired by the Slovak television channel Markiza, where she had worked for almost 18 years for sharing anti-migrant content on social media. For Markiza, she moved to the television TV Slovan, which is well known for peddling conspiracy theories and disinformation. In one of the first speeches as culture minister, Šimkovičová stressed that she is against mixing Slovak and foreign cultures. The culture of the Slovak people should be Slovak. Slovak and no other. We tolerate other cultures, but our culture is not a mixture of other cultures, she said. With many artists and independent creatives in Slovakia signing a petition protesting her appointment, she was certainly not greeted with open arms by the sector for which her ministry is responsible. So that's the story there. Anyway, that's our story as well. I wish you a good weekend. Thank you for being with us. Let's hope for the best and be well. And take care. Goodbye.